Chapter 27. The night was still young when Pitt and Julia left St. Julian Perlmutter's carriage house. Pitt turned the Duesenberg around and drove out the driveway toward the street. He stopped before entering the traffic. The two Ford vans, driven by the special bodyguards from the security company hired by Peter Harper, were not parked and patiently waiting at the curb. They were nowhere in sight. "It seems we've been abandoned," said Pitt, his foot firmly on the brake pedal of the Duesenberg. Julia looked puzzled.
"I don't understand. I can think of no reason why they would desert us."
"Maybe they decided we were boring, and they drove to a sports bar to watch basketball."
"Not funny," Julia said grimly.
"Then it's deja vu all over again," Pitt noted with deceptive calm. He leaned across Julia, reached into a side pocket on the door, pulled out the old .45 Colt that he had reloaded, and handed it to her. "I hope you haven't lost your touch since our escapade on the Orion River." She shook her head vigorously.
"You're exaggerating the danger."
"No, I'm not," he argued. "Something is seriously wrong. Take the gun, and if you have to, use it."
"There must be a simple explanation for the van's departure."
"One more prognostication of Pitt's precognition. The pockets of the Immigration and Naturalization Service are not as deep as the pockets of Chin Chang Maritime Limited. I suspect Harper's private security guards were paid double to pack up and go home." Julia snatched the radio transmitter from her purse.
"This is Dragon Lady. Come in, Shadow, and give me your position."
She patiently waited for a response, but her only reply was static. She repeated the message four times, but received no answer.
"This is inexcusable," Julia snapped.
"Can you raise anyone else with your call box?" Pitt asked cynically.
"No, it's only good for about 2 miles."
"Then it's time to..." Pitt stopped in mid-sentence as the two vans suddenly turned the corner of the block and pulled up at the curb, one on each side of the Duesenberg, which was still sitting in the driveway. They left barely enough room for the Duesenberg's wide, flowing fenders to pass into the street between them. They showed no headlights, only parking lights. The figures inside looked vague and shadowy through the darkened, solar-coated windows.
"I knew nothing was wrong," said Julia, squinting at Pitt with a know-it-all look.
She spoke into her radio transmitter again.
"Shadow, this is Dragon Lady. Why did you leave your positions around the carriage house?"
This time, a voice answered almost immediately. "Sorry, Dragon Lady, we thought it best to circle the block and look for any suspicious vehicles. If you are ready to leave, please give us your destination."
"I don't buy it," Pitt said, eyeing the distance between the two parked vans, while gauging the passing traffic on the street. One van should have remained in position while the other circled the block.
"You're an agent. Why am I telling you?"
"Peter would not have hired irresponsible people," Julia said firmly. "He doesn't work that way."
"Don't answer just yet," said Pitt harshly. Danger, like a red warning sign, began to flash in Pitt's brain. "We've been sold out. A dime will get you a dollar. Those are not the same men Harper hired." For the first time, Julia's eyes reflected a growing apprehension.
"If you're right, what do I tell them?"
If Pitt thought their lives were in deadly peril, he didn't show it. His face was cool, his mind focused. "Say we're going to my place at the Washington National Airport."
"You live in an airport?" Julia asked, baffled.
"For almost 20 years. Actually, I live on the perimeter." Julia shrugged in bewilderment and gave the instructions to the men in the vans as Pitt reached under the seat and produced a cellular phone. "Now get hold of Harper. Explain the situation and say we're on our way toward the Lincoln Memorial. Tell him I'll try to stall off our arrival until he can arrange an intercept." Julia dialed a number and waited for the party on the other end to answer. After giving her identification, she was put through to Peter Harper, who was at home relaxing with his family. After she gave him Pitt's message,
She sat and listened in silence before punching off the phone. She looked at Pitt, expressionless.
Help is on the way. Peter also said to tell you that, considering what happened at your hangar earlier this evening, he regrets not being more alert to possible problems.
Is he sending law enforcement teams to the memorial for the intercept?
He's contacting them now. You never told me what happened at your hangar.
Not now.
Julia began to say something, thought better of it, and said simply,
"Shouldn't we have waited right here for help?"
Pitt studied the vans parked quietly and ominously at the curb. "I can't sit here any longer looking like I'm waiting for the traffic to ease, or our friends will begin to think we're onto them. Once we reach Massachusetts Avenue and merge into the main stream of traffic, we'll be reasonably safe. They won't risk exposure by attacking us in front of 100 witnesses."
"You could call 911 on your cell phone and ask them to respond with a patrol car cruising the area.
If you were a dispatcher, would you buy some bizarre story and take responsibility for ordering a fleet of patrol cars to charge to the Lincoln Memorial and look for an orange and brown 1929 Duesenberg that is being pursued by killers?"
"I suppose not," Julia admitted.
"Better we left it to Harper to call out the posse."
He slipped the big stick shift on the floor into first gear and accelerated out into the street, turning to the left so the vans would lose time swinging a U-turn to follow him. He gained almost 100 yards before he caught the lights of the lead van coming up on his rear bumper. 2 blocks later, he whipped the heavy Duesenberg onto Massachusetts Avenue and began snaking in and out of the nighttime traffic. Julia tensed as she looked through the steering wheel and saw the needle creep up and waver at 70 miles an hour.
"This car doesn't have seat belts."
"They didn't believe in them in 1929.
"You're going awfully fast."
"I can't think of a better way to attract attention than by exceeding the speed limit in a 70-year-old car that weighs almost 4 tons.
"I hope she has good brakes."
Julia resigned herself to the chase, uncertainty still in her mind. "They're not as sensitive as modern power brakes, but if I stomp on them, they do the job just fine." Julia gripped the Colt automatic, but made no effort to remove the safety or aim it. She balked at accepting Pitt's assertion that their lives were in jeopardy. That their bodyguards had turned on them seemed too incredible to believe.
"Why me?" Pitt moaned, as he careened the monster around Mount Vernon Square, the big tires howling in protest, heads turning on the sidewalks, people staring incredulously. "Would you believe this is the second time in a year a pretty girl and I had to escape sharks who chased us over the streets of Washington?"
She stared at him. "This happened to you before?"
"On that occasion I was driving a sports car and had a much easier time of it." Pitt aimed the polished hood ornament on the radiator cap down New Jersey Avenue before hammering a right turn onto First Street and accelerated toward the nation's capital and its mall. Cars that got in his way, he frightened aside with warning blasts from the big twin horns mounted beneath the massive headlights. He spun the thick rim of the steering wheel violently as they raced between the traffic on the crowded street. The vans were still on his tail. Because of their faster acceleration, they had closed until their reflections loomed in the rearview mirror atop the center of the windshield. Although the Duesenberg could outpull them if given a long enough straight stretch, it was not a car that would set records at a drag strip. Pitt had yet to shift from second to third, and the gears wailed like a banshee. The giant engine with its twin overhead cams turned effortlessly at high RPMs. The traffic on the street ahead thinned, and Pitt was able to push the Duesenberg as hard as she could go. He slewed the car into the circle around the Peace Monument behind the Capitol building. Then another quick twist of the steering wheel, and the Dewsey drifted on all four wheels around the Garfield Monument, skirted the reflecting pool, and shot down Maryland Avenue toward the Air and Space Museum. From behind them, over the exhaust roar of the Duesenberg, they heard a brief staccato of gunfire. The mirror, attached to the top of the spare tire cover, mounted in the left front fender, abruptly disintegrated. The shooter quickly adjusted,
and a stream of bullets shredded the top frame of the windshield, shattering the glass, which showered across the hood of the car. Pitt slipped down low behind the wheel, his right hand grabbing Julia by the hair and yanking her horizontal on the leather seat. "That concludes the entertainment part of our program," muttered Pitt. "No more chicken-hearted maneuvers."
"Oh, God, you were right," Julia shouted in his ear. "They are out to kill us."
"I'm going to make a straight run so you can return their fire."
"Not in traffic, not on these streets," she retorted. "I couldn't live with myself if I hit an innocent child."
Her reply was a frenzied sideways motion as the car rocketed across Third Street. Instead of turning with the traffic, Pitt cut across the pavement and sent the Duesenberg leaping over the curb onto the grass of the Capitol Mall. The big 750 by 17-inch tires took the raised concrete as casually as a minor speed bump. Sod was ripped out of the ground by the spinning rear wheels and sprayed out and under the rear fenders like shrapnel. Julia did what any sane woman would do under the same circumstances. She screamed and then cried out,
"You can't drive down the middle of the mall."
"I damned well can and will so long as we live to tell about it," Pitt shot back. His seemingly crazy and totally unexpected maneuver had the desired results. The driver of the lead van tenaciously chased the Duesenberg over the curb onto the grassy mall and blew all four tires in the attempt. They struck the concrete barrier with such force that they exploded in a rapid series of loud pops. The much smaller, more modern tires on the vans could not jump over the curb with the ease of the Duesenberg's big donuts. The second van's driver elected for discretion, checked his speed in time, braked, and slowly drove over the curb without damaging his tires. The men in the first van, there were two, frantically abandoned their vehicle and flung themselves through the open side door of the second one. Then they all stubbornly took up the chase again, pursuing the Duesenberg across the middle of the mall to the astonishment of hundreds of onlookers who were heading for home after an open-air Marine Corps band concert at the Navy Memorial. The shocked expression on their faces ranged from frozen incomprehension to stunned astonishment at seeing the huge car with the artistically flowing lines tearing across the mall between the National Air and Space Museum and the National Gallery of Art. Groups of people strolling or jogging along the mall's paths were suddenly galvanized into chasing the speeding vehicles on foot, certain they were about to witness an accident. The Duesenberg was still accelerating with Pitt's foot flat on the gas pedal. The long car flared as it tore across 7th Street, skidding around passing cars, Pitt fighting the wheel with grim tenacity. The mammoth car was incredibly responsive. The faster the speed, the more solid the feeling of stability. All he had to do was point the car where he wanted to go, and she went. He breathed a brief sigh of relief at seeing no cross traffic on 14th Street, the next thoroughfare across the mall. The side mount mirror and the rear view mirror on the windshield had both been blown to pieces by the earlier burst of gunfire, and he could not spare a brief glance to see if the pursuing van was closing within accurate firing range again. "Take a peek over the seat and see how close they are," he yelled to Julia. She had thumbed off the side safety on the Colt and had it aimed over the backrest of the seat. "They slowed when bouncing over the curb on the last two cross streets," she answered, "but they're gaining. I can almost see the whites of the driver's eyes."
"Then you can begin shooting back."
"This isn't the wilderness around Orion River. There are pedestrians all over the mall. I can't risk striking anyone with a stray shot."
"Then wait until you can't miss."
The men firing out the sides of the van were not as considerate. They unleashed another burst at the Duesenberg, drilling the big trunk mounted on the rear of the body, the thuds of the bullets mingling with the pulsing bursts erupting from the gun's muzzles. Pitt wrenched desperately on the wheel, dodging the fusillade that whistled past the right side of the car. "Those guys don't have your sensitivity toward others," he said, thankful that he had managed to swerve around any car that crossed his path without accident. Wishing he had a magic wand to stop the traffic, he hurtled across 15th Street, narrowly missing a newspaper truck and throwing the Duesenberg into a four-wheel slide to avoid a black Ford Crown Victoria sedan, which had replaced most of the government limousines. Fleetingly, he wondered what government VIP was riding inside.
He felt a small surge of comfort at knowing the van had to drop back to negotiate the curbs. The towering Washington Monument rose in front of the car's path. Pitt guided the car around the floodlit obelisk and sped down the slight slope on the opposite side. Julia was still unable to get a clear shot as Pitt concentrated on getting the Duesenberg past the monument without losing control on the slippery grass. And then they were heading toward the Lincoln Memorial at the end of the mall. Seconds later, he came to 17th Street. Thankfully, there was a slot in the middle of the traffic, and he shot toward the other side without endangering passing cars. Despite the violent chase through the avenues of Washington and across the mall, he saw no flashing red lights, nor heard sirens from pursuing police cars. If he had attempted the mad ride across the mall on any other occasion, he'd have been stopped and arrested for reckless driving within the first 100 yards. Pitt had a short breathing spell as they roared between the reflecting pool and Constitution Gardens. Almost directly ahead loomed the brilliantly illuminated Lincoln Memorial and the Potomac River beyond. He turned and looked over his shoulder at the van, which was coming up fast on the Duesenberg again. The van's twin headlights were so close, he could have read a newspaper under them. The contest was too uneven. Despite the Duesenberg being a magnificent automobile by which all others were measured, it was a case of a big game hunter in a bush vehicle chasing an elephant. He knew that they knew he was running out of space. If he cut and swung right toward Constitution Avenue, they could easily cut him off. To his left, the long reflecting pool stretched almost to the great white marble memorial. The water barrier looked impassable. Or was it? He roughly pushed Julia off the seat onto the floor. "Keep down and hold on tight." "What are you going to do?" "We're going boating." "You're not only deranged, you've gone berserk." "A rare combination," Pitt said calmly. His features were fixed in concentration, his eyes glistening like those of a hawk circling over a hare. There was a look of unfathomable detachment about him. To Julia, who stared up from her position on the floorboards under the dashboard, he looked as relentlessly determined as a comber surging toward a beach. Then she saw him snap the wheel to the left, sending the Duesenberg sliding sideways in the grass at nearly 70 miles an hour, the big rear wheel spinning crazily, ripping up the turf like giant meat grinders and just missing the large trees spaced 22 feet apart along the pool. After what seemed like ages, the tires dug in and gripped the soft ground, sending the car beyond the point of no return, her immense bulk lunging forward into the reflecting pool. The heavy steel chassis and aluminum body, driven by the full force of the powerful engine, smacked into the water with an enormous white explosion that leaped from her front and sides like Niagara Falls turned upside down. The sickening thump jarred the Duesenberg from bumper to bumper as her great weight sank, pushing her balloon tires onto the concrete bottom where their rubber treads bit and hurled the car forward like a bull whale charging through the sea after a female in heat. The water gushed over the hood and flooded through the shattered windshield into the front compartment, drenching Pitt and nearly inundating Julia. Unaware exactly of Pitt's intentions, she was petrified at finding herself suddenly submerged under a deluge. To Pitt, taking the full brunt of the torrent, it seemed as if he was driving into raging breakers only a surfer could love. There was no growth on the bottom of the reflecting pool. It was drained and cleaned by the Park Service on a regular basis. The distance between the surface of the water and the top of the edge along the sides measured only 8 inches. The bottom of the pool was not flat, but sloped from a depth of 1 foot around the walls to a maximum depth of 2.5 feet in the middle. The distance from the pool floor to the top edge of the wall measured 20 inches. Pitt prayed the engine wouldn't flood and die. The distributor, he knew, was a good 4 feet from the ground. No problem there. Nor with the carburetors, as they sat well over 3 feet high. But his main concern was the spark plugs. They rested between the twin overhead camshafts at 3 feet on the nose. The reflecting pool was exactly 160 feet in width. It seemed impossible for the Duesenberg to navigate such an obstacle. But she bulldozed a gaping valley through the water, her engine gamely producing torque to the rear wheels and not drowning out. She had pushed her way to within 10 yards of the opposite edge of the pool when the water around her suddenly erupted in a cloud of small geysers.
"Obstinate bastards," Pitt muttered to himself. He gripped the big steering wheel so hard his knuckles bleached white. The chase van had stopped at the edge of the reflecting pool, her occupants tumbling out and firing wildly at the big car crashing through the water. Their shock and disbelief had cost them nearly a full minute, giving Pitt time almost to reach the other side. Realizing this was their final chance, they pumped shot after shot at the floundering Duesenberg, seemingly deaf and dumb to the sirens and flashing lights that were converging on them from 23rd Street and Constitution Avenue. Too late did they finally sense their predicament. Unless they followed Pitt across the reflecting pool, an act about as conceivable as producing wings and flying to the moon because of their modern smaller wheels and tires, they were left with no alternative but to try to evade the rapidly approaching police patrol cars. Without the luxury of a conference, they leaped back in the van and spun a 180-degree turn before tearing back across the mall toward the Washington Monument. The Duesenberg was coming up the slope of the pool toward the edge now. Pitt slowed the car, carefully judging the height of the wall in relation to the size of the front tires. He backshifted the transmission into first, actually crammed it into gear. The gears inside the 3-speed non-synchro mesh crash box shrieked in protest before they finally meshed in place. Then, 10 feet before meeting the wall, Pitt stamped the gas pedal into the floorboard as hard as he could, taking advantage of the upward slope of the pool to lift the front end of the car. "Do it," he implored the Duesenberg. "Go over the wall." As though she had a mechanical brain and heart, the old Duesenberg responded with a burst of acceleration that lifted the front end, barely clearing the bumper over the edge of the pool, the tires rolling up the wall until they shot over the edge onto flat ground. The Duesenberg's ground clearance was almost a foot, but not high enough for the bottom of her chassis to run clear. She canted steeply, followed by a rending crash. Then an ungodly scraping, tearing sound ripped the air. For a moment, she seemed to hang. Then her momentum propelled her forward, and she leaped ahead, as if grinding her guts out over the concrete wall, until all four wheels were on the grass of the mall again. Only at that instant did the engine begin to miss. Almost like a golden retriever exiting a river with a bird in its mouth, the Duesenberg shuddered, shook herself free of the water that filled her body, and limped ahead. After only 100 yards, the fan behind the radiator and the heat from the engine worked in unison to blow dry the water that had splashed and shorted 4 of her spark plugs. Soon, she began hitting on all 8 cylinders again. Julia came up off the floor sputtering and peered over the back of the car at the van speeding away under pursuit by 4 police cars. She wrung the water from the hem of her dress and ran her fingers through her hair in a vain attempt to look presentable. "I'm a mess. My dress and coat are ruined." She looked at Pitt with a look of pure anger. Then her expression softened. "If you hadn't saved my life for the second time in as many weeks, I'd make you buy me a new outfit." He turned to her and smiled as he set the Duesenberg on a course down Independence Avenue and across the Memorial Bridge toward the Washington National Airport and his hangar. "Tell you what, if you're a good girl, I'll take you to my place, dry your clothes, and warm you up with a cup of coffee." Her gray eyes were soft and unblinking. She laid a hand on his arm and murmured, "And if I'm a naughty girl?" Pitt laughed, partly from the relief of escaping another death trap, partly from seeing Julia's bedraggled appearance, and partly because she was trying, without success, to cover the parts of her body that were revealed through the wet dress. "Keep talking like that, and I'll skip the coffee."